Southern hip-hop is legendary for its drum machine beats, a thunderous bass line, and shouting vocals that bring you into the moment in all its glory. It's a fun and uproarious art form that draws inspiration from big celebrations like Mardi Gras and relies on the audience for call and response participation.
Yoo-hoo! We have a caller on the line.
Who is it?
It's Casey Ortiz, the queen of Southern luxury rap, who's been on an amazing journey. Casey came to Chicago from Alabama, courtesy of the United States Air Force, to lay down some fierce tracks about her experience as a black trans woman. And folks are loving it. In many of the singles she released this past year, Casey bares her soul about worrying about her boyfriend running off with her friends, accepting loss when dreams don't come true, and the luxuriousness of a $30 coat.
Listen as we play some of Casey Ortiz's hottest songs, chat with her about her music, the Black Lives Matter movement, and the ever-changing face of the entertainment industry. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Nothing but net. I'm straight blacked out like a silhouette. Hey yo, good looking. What you got cooking? What up, hoes? Bitch puttin'. I'm hitting switches like an ass whipper. Stacking my chips, no double dipping. Not pranks, diamond bangles. Head so fine, make an asshole tangle. They mad, I get more dicks than Tracy. I'm a king, not Stacy. Trooper, wetter than a loofah. And I'm holding the crown, King Cooper. Use a small one, like Toadstool. I'm doing this rap shit, I told you. I got them shot like I taste a hoe. And y'all know I'm so irreplaceable. To the left.
Hello.
Hi, is this the queen of Southern luxury, Casey Ortiz?
Yes, it is.
This is not a collection agency. Although we are here to gather your stories and your legends. This is Fausto Fernos.
And Mark Fillion from Feast of Fun. It's a pleasure to talk to you today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. I've been following you on Facebook for a while now, and I'm just like, I've got to get her on the podcast.
Thank you.
Well, now you have her, Mark. What are you going to do?
Well, we're going to talk about some music, right?
Yes, let's do it.
Casey, we've been enjoying listening to your music. You have such a wonderful style. For people who are not familiar with Southern hip hop, how would you best describe it?
For me, it's just like a feeling of like, when I think of it, I think of like Juvenile, Master P, like a lot of the Southern artists. Mm-hmm. Especially like the New Orleans artists, I just love like the twang and like the pronunciation and all of that stuff. For so many years when I joined the Air Force, like people made fun of my accent. So I spent so many years trying to like hide it. Mm. And I just got to the point where I was like, this is what makes me different. This is what like makes me like stand out. And it was just me embracing that.
You do such a great job about that. You know, like for me, like Southern hip hop is about sort of channeling that Mardi Gras happiness, that playful nature of the spring into music.
Yes.
And, you know, and that's part of it, like, why you sometimes hear those distorted, like, vocals, the chorus, that sounds like little elves or children in the background.
On which one?
A lot of the tracks, like Bitch Pudding that we played earlier, there's a it's kind of a style to Southern hip hop that has
a distortion to some of the sound,
like,
right?
The sounds like kids are, like, you know, cheering in the background to a lot of the tracks, actually, and not just yours, you know?
It's just like a feeling that I used to get from those songs. And I feel that like Beyonce embodies a lot of that as well.
Well, Beyonce is like the queen of that genre, wouldn't you say?
Yes. Like, I feel like in her later album, she's really brought out that like Southern flair. Mm-hmm.
And someone like also Big Frida.
Yeah. Well, they even say like Beyonce, like she moved herself into an area where a lot of people involved in the Southern hip hop scene lived, and she bought a mansion. She's like, you all work for me now.
And happily they do.
Yeah.
Well, they're lucky.
Well, that's the thing, you know, it's like with Big Frida and Beyonce's huge Runaway album, you know, it's like the whole world kind of rediscovered Southern luxury or Southern hip hop all over again. And it's certainly like you're certainly somebody in the LGBTQ space that is very celebrated and, you know, admired for telling your stories through the music.
Yes. And it took me a while to get to that area of just being comfortable to just talk about me, because when I first started doing music, I was, you know, I had a lot of friends like, oh, you should talk about this and you should talk about that. And I was more trying to fit in. And I felt like I felt better when I just started being authentically me and like telling my story.
Mm. Well, you were really young when you first enrolled in the Air Force, right?
Yes.
How old were you? Were you 17?
No, I went in, I want to say like 18 or 19.
Mm. Okay. What inspired you to want to enlist?
I didn't want to enlist. It was basically like an ultimatum my mom gave me. And it was like, you can go to the military or you can like get out of my house.
Oh, shit.
And yeah, so it wasn't like my choice. I didn't want to go at all. I remember when I had to go to the Air Force, I just felt like my dreams of like were just being burned in front of my eyes, because the military was not the direction I wanted to go whatsoever. You know what I mean? But in retrospect, I do appreciate the experience.
What was the experience like for you?
I was lucky. Like, I've met like two of my closest friends there, and we still keep in contact to this day. They were like a big support, because before I met them, I was like so sad. And when I was in the Air Force, it was like around, it was like Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So I had to like basically pretend to be someone else. And I had these two girlfriends that we could like sit in the dorms and I could be myself around them. But yeah, for the most part, I value a lot of the like like a lot of the values I learned in the military. You know, a lot of that stuff has really stuck with me through the years.
And what time do you usually wake up?
Oh, if I'm lucky, I might sleep into 10.
And do you make your bed as soon as you get up in the morning?
No.
You're like, I learned something, not everything.
Stick with me.
I used to live with an ex-Marine, and he always made his bed in the morning, and it was like, it was so tight. I was just like, this is crazy.
That, but not everything was tight for him.
Well, we didn't have that. We didn't have that kind of relationship. I could have though. Maybe if he had wanted it. But.
Well, this is the thing we've sort of found out is that, you know, because of the, I don't know, the horrors and the abuse that LGBTQ people go through, and you know the fact that a lot of people who serve in our military go off to war or are put in very dangerous situations. We can bond with our very twisted sense of humor of dealing with violence. Is that something you kind of discovered in your experience in the Air Force?
I kind of like turned to music as my escape. Uh-huh. You know, in the car, I could lip sync Deborah Cox. I could lip sync Janet Jackson. And, you know, I would do that on the way to like a command call where I had to butch it up, you know. But the whole way there, I'm like lip syncing like absolutely not. So music was like kind of my escape. I was terrified one night because I was in my room. I had snuck some heels and a little gig outfit in. And I'm literally in my room dancing to Christina Aguilera. And
what song was that?
Dirty.
Oh, wanna get dirty. Dirty. That one.
And I forgot to lock the door. And someone walked in on me. Yeah.
Oh, wow. What was the reaction like?
It was my suite mate. So you like share a bathroom with someone. And I remember just being so terrified, like, oh my God, I'm finna get kicked out. What am I gonna do? And my girlfriends, they knew that I was dressing up, you know, on the down low.
Yeah.
And one of them lived right above me, and I call her and I'm whispering and I'm like, oh my God, someone just walked in on me, like, performing. I was dressed up and everything. And you just hear this thunderous laugh coming, like, through the ceiling.
They're laughing. Meanwhile, you're like, oh, shit, what's going to happen, you know? Because it was you know? Were you still in the military when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was lifted?
No, I was already gone. Mm.
And what year did you leave, exactly?
I don't want to age myself. Okay.
Well, this is the thing, you know, it's like, I don't know if this stuff happened after the ban on LGBTQ people. Well, I'm sorry, let's be real clear. It was lesbians and gays, and the transgender ban took place later, mm-hmm. and then was brought back by Trump, and now it's been undone again.
But, so I left, it was like just the gay. They hadn't even got to the trans people yet.
Right. And so, you know, on the internet, we see all these guys with bananas, you know, giving blowjobs to bananas in the military. And they're like proud to do it. They're like, I can suck a dick, you know? And I'm just like, it's sort of like unfair because, you know, part of the thing is that they're comfortable in doing it. Is they're like, well, I don't really suck a dick, you know. I'm just doing this for laughs. Mm. But you know,
or maybe they really do, and that's their way of hiding it.
Exactly, and I'm just like, and you know, some these young people are beautiful, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also find though too is like, you know, working with straight guys, sometimes they flirt with you more than a gay guy ever would because they don't necessarily mean it. You know what I mean? So they'll say all sorts of stuff, and so I can imagine, you know, we've had a lot of people in the military over the years that have listened to this podcast, you know, and they're just like, your sense of humor kind of jives with ours because we're always joking about this person doing this and this, you know, having sex with that person, and even if it's not really even happening.
Something you said just really like stood out to me. You was like, they flirt so much because like they feel safe and like they don't believe it. And that happens a lot being trans with like gay men.
Oh yeah.
And I've heard, at first I just thought it was me, but I've heard it from a lot of girls. And it's like, but to the guy, they're just joking around, but to this girl who a lot of times is, you know, vulnerable and looking for that acceptance.
Yeah.
Mm. It's like music to your ears.
Because you're getting flirted with.
Well, that's not fair. You know, part of it is like, because you want to feel safe and you want to be loved and embraced, you know, and you know, for a lot of people who are cisgendered, who are not going through this experience of, you know, changing how you appear to others on the outside, they're thinking, oh, this is such an adventure, this is such a lark, you know, but for you, it's a survival, right?
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of times people kind of want to play on that line of, oh, you know, this is my girlfriend, or, you know, like kind of play that heteronormative role play.
Right.
But a lot of times the girl gets swept into that fantasy and the guy is like, oh, I was just playing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, geez, I hope I haven't done that and broken some hearts out there.
And you haven't broken any hearts. No, but, you know, part of it is like, and I'm starting to see this division happening as trans people become more visible and comfortable in being their authentic selves, then the ability to have that conversation starts to happen more and more often. You know, it's like when Scruff or Grindr, all that stuff happened, there were no trans men on there, you know? Mm-hmm. And today you open up these dating apps for gay men and there's a lot of very good looking trans men who are like,
and trans women.
And trans women. They're like, I'm sorry, I'm not interested in you. You're not hot enough for me.
They say that to you?
To other people too, you know? It's like, because part of it is like, they're like, oh, well, because you're trans, you're going to have sex with me, you know? And it's like, honey, I'm still a human being. I have tastes and standards, not just a pulse. Hello.
And that is so true what you think. Like, sometimes the people who are like, oh, like, I don't want her getting the wrong idea. I'm like, I don't, no, thank you, you know? Mm-hmm. And people think that just because you're trans or you're gay or you're in, like, some smaller group that you're going to automatically want them. And it's like, no, we got standards just like you. Trust me.
Mm. Right. Let's go to church.
Okay.
You have a whole album that samples music from Southern. I'm sorry. You're sampling sermons from preachers, and you're performing on top of it, which I think is really wonderful. And one song that you have is called "Shut Up."
Mm-hmm.
I'm not telling you to shut up. We're talking about the song title here, and where you're playing audio clips from Pastor Cheryl Brady. I kind of want to read these to you and maybe have you like talk a little bit about who Cheryl Brady is and what they mean to
you.
Okay. Cheryl Brady says, "Do you know what it's like to have a dream and say, 'God, I don't know. It's not coming to pass because it's not your will for my life. Should I nourish it a little bit more? Should I pour something on it, God? Or is it time to bury it and walk away? I mean, I struggle with those kind of things right there, Lord. It is not coming together because it's not your will for my life. Because if it isn't your will for my life, I don't want it. I don't want anything that's not your will for my life. Lord, do I stay in this relationship?" What is Cheryl Brady trying to say there?
For me, the way I took it, mm-hmm. and I have come to this moment so many times where it's just like, you feel like you have exhausted your efforts. You feel like you've done everything to try to get this dream off the ground. And you get to the point where you just feel like, is this just not for me? Is this just like not supposed to happen? Because I feel like I've thrown everything I have at it. And no matter what I do, it doesn't seem to be working. And that is so personal to me because I fight with that issue so much. Because I'm always on the line of, oh my God, I've accomplished so much and I haven't accomplished enough.
But who's setting that decision? Who's making that decision?
In my heart, I feel like I'm nowhere close to where I'm supposed to be.
Right.
You know, like there's this feeling inside of where there is. You like mm-hmm. you explain it, but you know where I'm supposed to be. And I'm not there yet. And that haunts me every day. Like it haunts me every day because I just feel like this isn't where I'm supposed to stop. You know, it's kind of like that, are we there yet mm-hmm. kind of feel.
Let's listen to a little bit of Shut Up with Pastor Cheryl Brady.
"We're now about to witness the strength of street knowledge. Me not blowing up, no way. At the pool party, we're houseway. At the pool party, we're Coday. Can't wait till you all know me. Got me fucked up, that's a typo. Bitches better know I'm so hype though. Grew up idolizing Michael. Fat booty dudes in my iPhone. Money on my mind so I concentrate. In the rap game I'm so underrated. Unsolved mystery, JonBenet. Ride my own, masturbate. Give me so wet that shit leak. Thank God that I found this beat. With the bullshit you better miss me. Take the high road if they diss me.
Do you know what it's like to have a dream and say, God, I don't know. Is it not coming to pass because it's not your will for my life? Should I nourish it a little bit more? Should I pour something on it, God? Or is it time to bury it and walk away? I mean, I struggle with those kind of things right there. Lord, is it not coming together because it's not your will for my life? Because if it ain't your will for my life, then I don't want it. I don't want anything that's not your will for my life. Lord, do I stay in this
okay.
Shut up."
You know, I like to say man's rejection is God's protection.
Oh my God, thank you. I just heard that a few nights ago, and you're just like the confirmation, because it is that feeling of just not fitting in, and that's mm-hmm. something I've dealt with ever since I was a kid. You know, it's just like, no matter how hard you try, you just don't fit in with the crowd.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, it's so painful to get rejected, especially when you're putting your heart and soul out there, and especially as an artist, especially as an LGBTQ person, especially as a Black American. It's like, especially as somebody who's, you know, put your own life on the line serving in the military. And it's like, you know, God, why is why am I being denied?
What else do I need to do?
What, you want my kidneys? Yes. You want my heart? I'm giving you that too.
But, you know, what is it? Trans actress and thought leader Alexandra Billings is, you know, her mantra, and she tells this to people all the time, is like, who you are is good enough. You know, for where who you are is good enough.
Well, and sometimes, you know, you want more. You're like, you know what? Who I am, I want more. I deserve more.
Yeah.
You know, we have this thing too. It's like, and we experience this all the time. And especially I think in 2020, it's been a difficult year for a lot of people, because it's like, we're kind of just like holding our breath literally with the pandemic, putting in behind masks. And it's just making all these feelings that we've already had about, you know, deferring our dreams and our ambitions. And now we're just like, you know, seeing all this greed and corruption and lethargy, you know, slowing down of everything that's good in this world just because some jerk somewhere is trying to get rich off of our lives.
Mm. And it's like we're in this whole, we're like in a sale almost, where you have to just sit and deal with it. Mm-hmm. There's no going to the bars and forgetting about it. There's no going to the movies. There's no going out and dancing the night away. You just have to sit and deal with it. This is like the time where there's no one to fight but yourself.
Right. And that's what I think was so beautiful about the Black Lives Matter movement of 2020. And I consider like the greatest achievement of the year, as maybe the decade even, is because it brought together civil rights groups that in the past have been fighting with each other. You know, and I was like, in listening to your music, it reminded me a lot of the music of this performer, Miss Peaches, Fry That Chicken. Do you remember that song? That was like a huge hit a decade ago. The
ding, 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 ding.
Fry That Chicken, you know.
And so I remember that.
It was a monster hit. And we just thought, oh, this is cute. You know, like nobody really thinks about it outside of the internet. But I guess it was like a big, big deal. And there was like books written about it. And basically talking about how in 2011... a lot of black musicians, hip hop and rappers, felt that Southern artists were too eager to reclaim harmful stereotypes or imageries or ideas. And that's why they were, you know, doing so well successfully. And they were saying like the, you know, Miss Peaches Fry That Chicken was kind of like the climax of that selling out of playing into racist expectations of what people want to see. And,
it,
there is something to be said, you know, like Outkast, the best selling hip hop album of all time is Outkast's album from 2003, Speaker Box, The Love Below.
Mm.
And if you look at like the top 10 best selling hip hop albums in history, 8 or 10 of them are from the South, you know, and part of it is like, well, maybe the South is an amazing cultural source of, you know, certainly you can't argue that Beyonce is not an extraordinary musician, regardless of how you feel about her. But, you know, some people are also saying that, you know, in a lot of ways, and this is more coming from musicians that are not successful or are struggling, especially musicians in the North. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts about this. It's like, you know, I feel like the Black Lives Matter movement of last year said, you know, all this is petty. And we need to put together our divisions and get together. And that means LGBTQ people. It means religious folks. It means traditionalists. It means progressives. Bring them all together and stop police violence and move society forward and fight racism.
One thing is your phone is cutting out a lot.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Can you hear us now? Is this okay? Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, it's like it seems better now.
Okay.
So what I was saying basically is that, you know, in 2011, there was a lot of division in that a lot of rappers and hip hop artists at the time felt that, you know, there was a lot of selling out by successful musicians that they were playing into people's racist expectations of what they wanted black artists to do in hip hop and rap. And I think a decade later, and I think that's kind of a, you know, we've moved forward from that to some degree with the Black Lives Matter movement. It was like America was united and saying, you know what, this, we need to stop this right now. What do you reflect on the last year about that?
Something I've kind of noticed, and it was kind of obvious to me, especially with that whole with Black Lives Matter and George Floyd. Like when God wanted to unite the Egyptians, he gave them a common enemy. I mean, the Israelites. He gave them Pharaoh, who was like a common enemy.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when you have a common enemy, it brings people together to take down that, like, okay, we may have our differences, but we got to get this, you know, taken care of. And I feel that it was, with everything that was happening, it was very sad. And as a Black person, it was very hard to watch. But it was almost like, okay, now you all have no, you can't turn your back now. Mm. You know, because it was so public and so grotesque that you can't, there's no excuses, there's no speculations. And I kind of feel like it had to happen. Mm-hmm. And sometimes tragedy brings forth the change. And for me, it was really hard to watch, especially being like Black and trans, because this trans girl got beat up at one of the rallies, you
right,
know?
Right.
So like something I was telling my grandma is, I don't have anywhere to lay my head because you deal with the transphobia in the Black community. And then when you come to the gay community, you deal with like the racism or the being left out or you don't fit in the circle. So it's kind of just like a lot of times trans women are forced to be the fighter because that's all we can do. All we can do is fight for everybody because no one is like there. No one is gonna fight for us. So when almost with us fighting for us, we're fighting for everybody.
Right.
And
maybe is that why you sort of were attracted to, I mean, in some degrees, it's like, is that something you felt you learned from being in the military to be a fighter?
A lot of times when people are like, oh, you're an activist, I don't feel like I am. I just feel like sometimes you when everyone else is turning their back and turning their eyes, sometimes you have to be the person to speak up.
Right.
And a lot of times trans women are pushed into having to do that. I don't feel like a lot of us want to be fighting all the time. We want to chill just like everybody else. But in most cases, everyone else is pretending like they don't see what's happening.
Well, it's more comfortable not to fight.
Yes.
You know,
it's easier to sit like there, like you don't see anything.
And, you know, sometimes we just want to have some fun. You have a really great track called Cookie Monster that came out last year about wanting to party, drinking Bacardi, getting your wick snatched if you're late to the party.
Yes.
We just want to party. Where is the Bacardi? Hoes getting their wig snatched if they showing up tardy. Did you get that reference? Who gon' check me, boo? I'm stomping on your dumb ass. I'm intellectual, no homosexual. But I be eating them bitches. No dessert, I put in work. My go do the dishes. Oh, me and my whole crew, we be rocking them Ray-Bans. Them girls giving us them ugly looks like the guy Co-Caveman. We flooded in that Iceman and call it Bobby Drake. Them rogue assholes can't afford a drink. Oh yeah, that's why they hate. One big room full of bad niggas trying to get that Georgia Dome from the best kitty liquor. Rap best kid the letter. Cause them cats be on some shit, man. Getting loose, Grey Goose, VIP wristbands. My bass got them cereals. What's that nut and honey? That Hermes Birkin, get me right. That's from that hustling money.
I wanna see you roll with it, take it low. Wobble that, bring it up, twerk with it, pop that, get it, girl.
Cookie Monster. Yum, yes. yum.
Get those cookies.
Yes. What inspired the song?
That is like one of the first songs I ever recorded. I just have it in my file. But it was a friend of mine actually made the beat and sent it to me. And was like, oh, you should rap over this. And this is when I first like even started trying to do music. And it was just me just making up fun lyrics. Like, back then, I really wasn't focusing on telling stories. I was just trying to be, like, kitschy and quirky. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was just, like, a fun track.
Yeah, and you can't go wrong with, you know, referencing Cookie Monster from Sesame Street either.
Yes, and it was kind of like a joke that one of our friends used to say Cookie Monster a lot, and sometimes in my songs, I would just say stuff that I know no one else would say. Mm. And yeah, that's where that came from. It's a lot of times it's like something I hear people say a lot, or something my grandma might say, or something my friends say a lot, but no one else is going to be saying that. You know what I mean?
Well, you want to have your own unique voice, right?
Yeah.
Now, when you left the military, you started transitioning. You were living in a lot of different places, Atlanta, Alabama, and South Dakota.
Yes.
How much time did you spend in those different states?
I wasn't in Atlanta very long at all. Okay. I was only there for like a week. And I was just like, oh, this isn't what my fantasy was in my mind when I moved here. Mm-hmm. So that's when I went back home to Alabama, where I was introduced to like pageant tapes and Continental and drag. That's, I was introduced to all that like when I went home in Alabama. Mm. And I was there for about 5 or 6 months. Then I moved to South Dakota.
Why South Dakota of all places?
One of my best friends lived there. Oh. And yeah, she was living there at the time. And she's like, you could just come up here and crash on my couch. And
I got on
the Greyhound. Yeah.
Wow, that's a hike from Alabama to the Dakotas.
Yes. Well, I was stationed in South Dakota, so that's how I had met this friend before I even got out the military.
Mm.
And so you get to South Dakota and you start working in the malls, I guess, in the makeup counters, or?
I started working the jewelry counter at TJ Maxx, and then I end up working my way into being a manager in Gadzooks in the mall.
I don't know what a Gadzooks is.
Is that like a gift shop?
It started off like the stores where we get the like shirts with all the like crazy sayings like Godhead and all that kind of stuff. And then they went more to like girls' clothing. Mm.
So it was where you can buy like glow-in-the-dark paints and stickers to stick on your walls and like, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race t-shirts and stuff like that. Well, that's...
it started off like that, like a Spencer's.
Mm. Spencer's gifts, yeah. Glitter, you know, things to look at when you're stoned.
Yeah, and I started transitioning on that job.
Oh, wow. Mm. And so you're at the mall working, and then, of course, there's people up to no good, and they're, like, going in there messing with you.
Yeah, because when I started, well, for one, there's really no black people in South Dakota. So I started in the mall, and, like, my transition was just kind of, like, overnight, like, Saturday when I went off work, right. I went and got my hair done. So it was just, I just showed up a new person on Monday. So it didn't take long for people to put two and two together, you know, mm-hmm. like people who were always coming in the store. And it kind of turned into like feeling like I was in a petting zoo, you know?
Oh, you felt like people were like a little bit too nice to you, or they felt like they're crossing boundaries they shouldn't?
No, when I was working in the mall, it was like people would just come in to look, you know, like they would just come like groups, especially like kids, teenagers, just come in like groups, like it was like sightseeing or something, you know.
Mm. And you're like, I'm gonna have to charge you for that.
Like this is real life, you know. Yeah. This isn't like a giraffe at the zoo. This is like a person living their life.
And part of it is like they were not even engaging with you. They're sort of staring at you from afar. Like, you know, like when we think about a lot of entertainers that, like, you know, like at comic book conferences, they like charge $40 to meet them, you know.
They're sitting at a desk and you have to pay money, but if you can't afford to pay money to meet them and get an autograph, you just kind of look at them from 50 feet away and be like,
and you know, and maybe it's like, you know, for a lot of people it's like you're not an entertainer, you're a clerk at a store or a manager at a store, you know. And it's like, it's not like you're, you know, getting paid to basically play the job of, you know, a retired Star Trek, you know, Nichelle Nichols at a Star Trek convention, you know?
Yeah, it was just people being like assholes, just being very mean.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
But
I'm sure there's some
it made me stronger.
And I'm sure there's some young kids that came to that mall. You know, when I was a kid, I was a mall rat, and you may have inspired somebody to live their authentic life, you know? Because
thank you. That's how I try to look at it.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing is where it's, you know, you're being who you are. It really gives confidence to all different sorts of people to be who they are and to find their authentic self. Because I want, you know, most people to be like that. Unless you're an asshole, then don't be your authentic self. Be somebody else, you know?
You know, when I was like, when I was growing up, there were like a few trans people in Mobile. And I remember like being at the Mardi Gras parades, and when they would walk by, like the stuff people would scream and yell at these girls. But I was that kid watching them that felt inspired, you know, at their courage. So I get what you mean.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Dolly Parton talking about a lot of the, you know, trans people or the drag queens or the sex workers or just women who liked wearing a lot of makeup. For her, they were her heroes. And that's what made her into this amazing entertainer, because she drew strength and inspiration from these people who were like willing to do anything to look fabulous in a pair of high heel shoes.
Yes.
Although in 2020, they're saying that high heel shoes are about to go extinct.
Really?
70% drop in the sale of high heels. Because, you know, people aren't going out. They're not, you know, they're not necessarily even going into the office or anywhere. So they're just kind of like.
I mean, remember when Payless shoe stores were all over the place? And if you were getting started in drag, or if you were a person with large feet, that was the only place you could get shoes that you could afford, you know?
Yes.
And they hurt sometimes.
They still hurt.
I guess high heel shoes were also on the decline even before the pandemic. And now that the pandemic happened, people are just like, oh, why? Sneakers, man. Sneakers. All the way.
Well, that's unfortunate, though.
Yeah.
Well, do you miss the going to Payless and getting yourself a, you know, something that looks nice and for $20? I do.
I mean, in when I look back at a lot of those shoes, I'm like, you should have left them shoes there. But you know, you find a gem here and there.
I love your sense of humor, Casey, and you're kind of like, you know, you're such a sweet, gentle person talking to you. And there's this kind of playful, rascally side of you that comes out in your music. I'm like, let me read you some of these titles back to you. Yes, bitch. Yes. Dollar drinks.
Sex me.
Yeah. How's she doing?
Expensive.
Bitch pudding.
$30 coat.
Illegal cable and $30 coat. And I'm just curious, like, when your songwriting process is getting started, is like, are you in the idea, like, you know, for us, we if the song title makes us giggle a little bit, then we write the song around the song title, or are you just like writing down your feelings and then the song title comes later?
Usually when I record, I don't even know what this title is gonna be.
Yeah,
I like listen to it, and a lot of times that's when I'd be like, oh, I'm gonna name it that, you know.
Let's listen to a little bit more of your music. Of those titles, which one do you want the people to hear?
I love $30 coat.
Yeah, I like that song too. Let's listen to it.
Destin taught me how to roll a blunt. Told him when to get on, my nigga, we gon' stunt. Big time. I was beat up and rain out. Watch the childish Gambino. Urban outfit, this still slay the evening. If you did me dirty, you best to repeat. Why is that? That's the way of the world, player. Call me Jane Toussaint, the verse slayer. Weave down, weave onto my penny line. Rip your heart out. Bloody Valentine, touchdown Tebow. What's good, mijo? Squad good, nah, you hoes with the placebo. I ain't fucking with them cuts.
Why they
hurt? It was on some fucking studs.
who everybody needs a good $30 coat.
Yes.
I'll tell you a story. We were outside one time. There's this bully in our community here, and I think he's mad because he tried to sleep with my husband Mark here with me, and Mark's like, you know, no thanks. And so I have taste. And so he started making fun of my coat, and he's like, that's a $30 coat. I'm like, so what? I was like, I like my coat. I look good in this coat, damn it.
I hate when people are like, oh, you like, this is a $500 purse. Like, that's just so tacky to me. I like to tell people that it was $3.
Yeah, part of it is like they're trying to fill some hole in their heart with an expensive brand name.
Yes.
And I was like, I have some coworkers, they will starve to death to get a $300 or $500 pair of shoes. And I'm like, Lord, honey, put some food on your table before you, like, you're wearing like the most expensive shoes you can find, but you're literally like eating, you know, drinking diet soda and potato chips because you don't have enough money to eat dinner. It's crazy sometimes.
Choices.
And that's kind of where that idea from that song came from, because I bought this coat and like, I went to this sale and I just got so much cheap clothes. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm saying, like, I'm stunned on you in these clearance items, you know? And I have been places where girls are like, oh, ha-ha, look at what you got on. But then when we go out, people like what I'm wearing more than their, like, $300 dress. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, it used to be so amazing to go to thrift stores, but you just don't have that anymore.
Everything's gotten expensive at the thrift stores. In the 80s and 90s, you could go and everything was so darn cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, some things you still get some steals and stuff, but, you know, now everybody's selling stuff on the internet first and, you know, they aren't dumping stuff out.
Well, when you visit your family in Alabama, are you finding, like, good deals in the thrift stores, or is it just the same no matter where you travel to?
I don't think I really... Maybe it's, like, the PTSD of Alabama thrift stores. Yeah. But I haven't been to a thrift store in Alabama in so long. But I like Village Town here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am an advocate of looking good for cheap, because I used to be one of those people who would spend all my money on clothes and don't even have money to get a drink, you know? So
oh shit.
I've learned to look good very inexpensively.
Yeah, I will learn how to ferment fruits and vegetables to make booze before I spend, you know, money on, you know, buying expensive vodka or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, someone said to me, it's like one time I was like feeling my oats, as you like to sample Gia Gunn in one of your songs. and I was like, you know, a person died in that. And I said, what? Well, good, because now I can slay with it.
A person died in what?
So when you buy clothes from a thrift store, what we're talking about here is that when you're wearing it, sometimes people will go up to you and they're like, you know, somebody died in that. And you'll be like, yeah, that's why I'm slaying.
And three people aren't going to have my outfit on tonight.
Nobody's going to have your outfit because it literally was taken from a person's estate sale.
Yeah. So, hey, I'm good.
So, Casey, how are you liking Chicago? How are you liking living here? How are you liking the scene?
I like it. Yeah. I don't like the cold. I don't like snow, but I mean, I deal with it. But I like Chicago. It's been like a very big learning experience for me living here.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What have you learned? What are some of the big takeaways for you about living in here?
To be more humble, that I don't have to like shit on other people to shine. Mm. It took a lot more entertainers
in Chicago knew that. Just throw a little friendly shade. Huh? I wish a lot of entertainers in Chicago knew that, because honey, it's like sometimes it feels like people are just fighting with each other all the time.
You know, or they got to bring somebody down because they think it's going to lift them up, right?
My drag mom used to always say to me when I was younger, because I was like that, and she would always say, there's enough money out here for all of us. Mm.
Now, I noticed that you played a Gia Gunn, I'm just feeling my oats.
Yes.
Clip. I think that's a song, Friends About Ya.
Yes.
Right. You're worried about introducing your lover to your friends because I can tell my friends about ya, but you're my hidden treasure. You're worried about losing somebody to your friends.
Well, we all know how the nightlife goes. It's like hungry hippos. Oh.
Yeah, where everybody's trying to swallow up balls.
You cannot bring around any fresh meat.
Oh, do you feel like if you found somebody that you're really, you know, in love with or attracted to, and you bring them around your other friends, is like you run the risk of like getting your heart broken?
Or them getting yanked?
It happens a lot, right? It's a common complaint I've heard from trans women. It's just like, oh, they're like, we've all dated the same guy, you know?
Yeah, it's like I said, it's like hungry hippos. And that's in the gay and trans world. You know, if you bring a cute boy to the gay club, you have to fight off the girls and the guy.
That's true.
So you better take them somewhere far off until you have that lockdown.
were you friends with Gia Gunn, or you just like that clip, or because you play it at the end of the Friends About Ya?
I like the clip, and I'm really cool with Gia. Like, we like hung out a few times when she was living here, mm-hmm. and I don't know, I just really like that clip, and it stuck in my head, and I wanted to use it.
She was mad when she moved out of Chicago. Did you go to that performance?
Her last performance in town. She was cursing people for
it. She was like, fuck this town. You guys suck. La, la.
More people should be here. Who's not here? Pay attention.
And I was like telling her, I was like, man's rejection is God's protection, Gia. Focus on the people who are here to love you and celebrate you. And she's just like, I know you're right, but I'm so mad at this town just for being so cold and rude to me. I mean, she really was mad.
Mm-hmm. I can feel that, you know, a prophet isn't good. What is it? A prophet isn't good in their hometown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I watched so many queens be ignored here, you know, until they get on Drag Race, then they're everyone's best friend. So,
yeah.
And so what has been your experience? Because you've been really close to a lot of, you know, nightlife entertainers, a lot of drag queens who have made it big in the national spotlight.
I feel like I get along with everybody, and I'm also kind of like a loner. So like I have a lot of people who I'm cool with that I don't necessarily hang out with every day. But like everyone who I've seen that has blown up, they have like still remained the same with me and still remain respectful and cool. I love cheering for people I know. So it's cool to see it. Because something this preacher, she says, she's like, if your friend's getting it, that means God's in the neighborhood. And your house ain't that far away.
Aw.
I like that.
Yeah, that is good. You know, I'm a firm believer in the rising tide lifts all ships. You know, if your friend's getting it good, it's going to help you as well. And
yes.
You don't have to push other people down for that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, when that ship gets a lot of fuel, it just goes whoop, and you never see them. And you know, it is heartbreaking sometimes when you're struggling to make your, you know, pay your bills, you know, and you're having to decide whether to get some fish sticks or some high heel shoes. And here's somebody else is like, I just bought, you know, a new Gucci purse and it goes great with my belt. I'm not quoting Gia Gunn here, by the way.
Okay. I got the door unlatched and everything. I'm sitting here right by the knob.
You're standing with a teddy, the red lights on, you know,
a plate of cookies.
A suitcase.
You know a lot of the Rue Girls from Chicago.
Yes.
Were you familiar with Silky Ganache?
I've never like talked to her.
Yeah.
I just had like an interaction with her once where she was in the club, I think maybe Splash, and she was live and she just came up to me. She's like, oh my God, you're pretty. Say hi to everyone. And I just waved and she like went about her way. But that was like really my only interaction with her.
You know, Silky is such a nice person and such a warm and friendly individual. And I feel like that show in a lot of ways did a disservice to changing people's perception of her, you know, because she was the pizza girl at the place on Halsted Street. For years, she sold pizza to people. And I was sitting there with my friend Kevy one night, and we're just like, we were talking about Camp Wanakiki. And she was like, Camp Wana what? And she was supposed to be on Camp Wanakiki the following week, but she had just that day found out that she got cast on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Okay.
And she knows who I am, right? So she leans into me and she's like, do you have any advice? And I said, honey, fearlessly be yourself. But if you can't do that, show them your desire, the I want. Because in musical theater, you know, at the beginning of the musical, it's like, I want to, like, you're familiar with Beauty and the Beast, right?
Kind of. I know what it is.
You've seen it.
The Disney musical,
right? So the beginning of the movie, you have Belle, who's, you know, stuck in a little town, and she's dreaming of a better life for herself, right? So she has this song where she's like, I want this, I want that, I want to live out, I want so much more than what they have planned for me.
Yes.
And so the reality TV shows, when they say about vulnerability, they're saying, I don't see what you're desiring. Why are you doing these outrageous things?
I get what you mean.
What is it that you want, right? And so I said to Silky, every day you got to wake up in the morning and say, I want blank. I want, fill in that question. And I think that's why she did so well. But unfortunately, you know, she also wanted to fight because her wig was too tight.
I have, like, one thing I've learned is, like, a lot of times the person I've seen on the way people are shown on that show aren't the person, like, the way I know that person. Right. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who do you feel like is the biggest kind of, like, difference?
Me personally, I don't like all the hate the Vixen gets.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. I have worked with her many times before Drag Race, and she's just always been, like, so sweet and so kind to me. And I just feel like a lot of times those people get made into villains, you know? And especially black girls, because if you got, like, a sassy white queen on there, everybody lives for it. But then when it's a black girl, you're mean and you're a bitch and all of that stuff.
Yeah, the fandom certainly does seem to react that way, don't they?
Yeah.
What kind of advice, or, you know, you were watching her going through that show and you're certainly close friends. You know, at one point in time, we were really close friends with the Vixen. She was on our show all the time. She did Cooking with Drag Queens. To me, it was heartbreaking seeing some of that conflict unfolding because I was like, you know, it's almost like you're in a situation, you think you're doing the right thing, and it's almost like you're, you know, situation where you just can't win.
Yeah, I saw this comic once, and it was like a man and his wife, and they had a camel, and in one of the pictures, they're both on the camel, and people are like, oh my God, they're so cruel doing that to that camel. Then one, he's riding the camel, and the wife is walking, and he says, what a pig to make his wife walk. Mm. Then the other one, she's on the camel, and they're like, what an idiot. He should be up there. And it said, no matter what you do, people are going to have something to say.
Mm. And so when you were watching that at home, were you wishing that, you know, Vixen would have done something differently? Or were you more like mad at the fact that she was kind of in a situation where no matter what she did, she would be struggling?
I feel like she just wasn't handed a good hand. And no matter what she did, it was going to be twisted and turned. And that is the fear of reality shows.
Mm. What are you making about this season? They've had transgender women, you know, the Peppermint before. But I think, you know, in this case with Gottmik as a assigned female at birth, a trans man, who, you know, they're navigating that experience on the show is a center focus. And, you know, people are like, oh, the only reason you're doing Gottmik is because Landon Sider was so successful on Dragula and you want some of that Monty Hunty.
I love the show. And like, I always try to focus on like, on my love of drag and not, you know, like, especially being like black and trans, it's so easy to a lot of times find, maybe be offended easily.
Or look for flaws when, you know.
Yes. Yes. And so one thing I have been working on is to just try to enjoy the show for what it is, not try to read into like the innuendos, because it's enough. I got enough to be mad about already. Mm. I don't need to find nothing else. You know what I mean? So that's been like something I've been trying to do, is just enjoy the show for what it is. It's just a fan.
Sure. Now, last June here in Chicago, a lot of the nightlife performers, drag queens, rappers, singers, musicians, comedians and stuff like that kind of all got together and said enough is enough to some of the bars and to some of the people that are kind of they called gatekeeping in the community.
Organizers of events and shows.
Organizers of events and shows. And what did you make of all that?
It made me like really happy, because before I got into music, you know, I was trying to do drag on Halsted Street, and I ran into so many of those issues. But back then, you know, we didn't have the Black Drag Council or any of this stuff.
Right.
And it wasn't as progressive either. So it was like, shut up or you lose your whole gig, you know? Mm. You just basically have to stand there and take it. And when I watched all that going down, to me, it was like reparations to see that these new kids aren't going to take it. And I admire so much what they did, because from working in the nightlife scene, a lot of people, you know, they get in those powerful positions and they get their ass on their shoulders and they just start treating people any kind of way. And when I was working in bars, that's something I had to deal with so much. But it's like, you had to just deal with it. Right. So I'm glad they're like standing up.
Well, I certainly hope, you know, most of the bars have been suffering because of the pandemic and have been closed. There's not really much happening in the realm of nightlife or entertainment, you know, happening there. And so I really hope that when things do open up, that that those changes do take place.
I feel like these girls are strong-footed enough to not, and also united enough to not backslide.
Hmm.
Your mouth to God's ears. God, are you listening? You know?
It's always.
Part of it is like, it's easy to be cynical when you see so many people struggle. I mean, you know, we started interviewing the Vixen on this podcast because we saw how, and Vixen is an extraordinary performer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a person who can like literally do cartwheels around everybody else.
Well, we saw her performance. We were like, wow, this is amazing. And then as we got to talk to her, we realized that we had seen her at an HRC event, the Human Rights Campaign, where they quote unquote gave her a scholarship, but the scholarship had no money. And I think I remember reading the program, there was a little footnote that said like, the scholarship is not a money one. And I thought, you know, that really sucks. Here they have this young person of color, and they're bringing them up on stage, presenting them in front of all these Richie Riches and acting like they're doing them a favor. And it's like, they're not giving them any money to go to school. And they ended up dropping out of school anyway. And so
they had to drop because there was no money.
Yeah. And then we did a gig and got a chance to talk to them. And they were just so disheartened by Boys Town and what was happening. They were just like, come on the podcast and talk about it. And those are all, you can listen to all of those in the archives.
But you know something, I was listening, like, I don't know who I was listening to, but they were saying how everyone quotes Martin Luther King, but when he was actually doing this stuff, they hated him for it.
Honey, they didn't hate him. They shot him dead. You know?
Yeah.
The FBI would send him letters, you know, tell him.
I think that just happened. There's new information, I guess, this week that Malcolm X was also coordinated. I guess there's evidence that the FBI coordinated his assassination as well.
Oh, wow.
This past week in 2021.
That's what we're discovering now?
We're discovering Malcolm X's family released hardcore information that the FBI and the New York Police Department were involved in his assassination. But part of it is like,
America,
we are so drowning in so many other crises. And it's just like a situation, I don't know, you know, there's so much uncertainty. It's great to have our community and our color and our flavors and it's great to have your music just to lose yourself in, to escape.
Yes. I have to like even monitor how long I even go online, because it's just everything, almost everything you read is infuriating.
Mm.
And so what do you do to escape?
I smoke a lot of weed, and I listen to
Atta girl.
I listen to a lot of gospel music, and sometimes I just get so stoned, and I lay in my bed. I put my headphones on, and I'm performing in Germany and Wembley. I'm just on my tour in my mind, and that's something I have done my whole life. Even like as a kid, I would just put my headphones on and my life would become a music video. So yeah. That's something I've kind of kept up.
You got to daydream. Daydreaming is super important to happiness.
Yes, down to the details, what shoes I'm wearing, the hair, like every detail.
And I wonder now, because we're, like you said, we're so absorbed with social media. We're on the train, we're on the phone, our computers, all that kind of stuff. And before, you know, you'd sit on a train ride and you might not have something to read. So you just sit there and kind of think and be like, where could I be right now? And I don't know if sometimes if we're losing that.
Our imagination.
Yeah, our imagination, that fantasy world that we kind of lived in.
So I'm on my phone so much at work or like at home that when I take the bus and the train, I make it a point to not be on my phone. I want to look at the scenery. I want to read the billboards. I want to see, I want to people watch.
You're picking up a man, right?
No way.
No train guys.
No. Mm-mm. I've been watching too many serial killer documentaries.
Those are terrible.
But yeah, I just try to like enjoy the scenery because the phone can just take so much out of you. Everyone's lives look cool. It makes you, it's just like everyone's showing you their highlight reel and it makes everyone insecure.
I don't know. You know, this week it's like, I have some friends of mine who are like, they're just the most, you know, people worship them. Because they think of them as the most beautiful people on the planet. And I was like, honey, you don't want that life full of heartache and struggle. And it's like, you get a little, you lift the Instagram veil just a teeny tiny bit. And you're like, ooh, this person, you know, it's like, you know.
They've got a six pack and big giant muscles, but it's like a lot going on besides that.
The reason they got a six pack abs is because they're starving to death. You know, it's like, and
yes.
And you're like, yeah, you may look young, beautiful because you're young and, you know, you're in shape, but it's like, whew, there is a story of heartache. Yeah.
Or overall, they're just, the looks are the only thing there, you know. There's been so many people, I'm like, oh my God, they're so beautiful on social media. And then you meet them in real life and they're just mean, evil, bitter, angry, you know. So social media, you could just be whoever you want on there and it's just all smoke and mirrors.
It's okay not to look like the girls in the magazines. But fortunately, I do. I love saying that to myself.
I know from my own social media that social media is an illusion.
Absolutely.
Because I look homeless most of the time.
But you on look social, good,
media, no. Social media,
you better listen, believe your album I'ma look good. Well, the album covers that are like, you know, photos of churches and things, but it's like, I'm looking at your PR photos, honey. You look good.
But that's not how I look at work.
Well, you know, obviously it's like you're not going to be painting for the show when you go into work, you know.
True.
What's your morning routine like?
When I was going into the office, I would play gospel music a lot when I'm getting ready because that just kind of calms my nerves. And I'm always on edge anyway because I feel like I should have like a record deal. I feel like I should be traveling the world. And like how I was saying that, how that haunts me all the time. My anxiety is so high. So that's where like the gospel music and like the weed smoking and all that come into because I just need to be calm and I'm like really high strung. So I don't need anything. I need stuff to calm me down.
Well, anytime you feel that voice inside you saying like, you should have a record contract, that's the devil talking.
Thank you.
And you say, devil, be gone. Because all that matters is love. And people are like, what, how much pot are you smoking now, Fausto? And part of that is like, love is the relationships that we have with each other. Right?
Yes.
And I always tell people, it's like, you can do the math. If you have 300 people that are willing to buy a ticket to your show, are willing to buy your next album, are willing to show up to something or love what you do. And 300 is not a lot of people, you know? You can find 300 people. You got to find your tribe. And it don't matter if you have a contract or not, because it's like your community, if you have a relationship, if you know the names of the your fans and they know you, truly know you, you don't have to worry about a record contract. At least in this day and age, I believe.
Thank you.
Now, it's going to be a lot easier if you got a record contract, don't get me wrong. Yes. And if someone offers you to be on television, you say yes. Because we've seen a lot of people, they're like, what am I getting for this? You know, they're very transactional.
Yeah.
When they're invited to tell their story, to share their ideas.
Yes.
And for me, I'm like, at the core of being an artist, and maybe you can speak to this, is inviting others to see the authentic you or an imagination of what you could be like.
Yes. And like for me, even when I say stuff like, oh, I want a record contract, for me it's more like I want more people to hear my art. And with me, you know,
yeah,
I just feel like, damn, more people should hear this. That's where my drive come from, is like, it's not just about being like rich or all that stuff. It's like, no, I want to share this with other people. I want them to experience this as well. That's where a lot of that fire comes from.
Do you know how many songs Michael Jackson recorded for Thriller?
How many?
No.
It was like almost like 200 songs.
That's a dream.
And he recorded an engineer with Quincy Jones about 200 songs, and only 13 made it onto.
And I don't know how many songs they still have in the vault. Yeah, that's right.
And you know, and you listen to some of those old Beatles songs that didn't make it. You're like, now I know why they didn't release them. You're like, but you know.
But that's something I was just telling my friend the other day. Like, I can't wait to, because now I'm paying for everything out of my pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
I cannot wait till I could just go in the studio, like you said, and just be able to play around and experiment and see what works rather than having to watch the clock, because you know you're paying by like the hour. So yeah, that's something I want to just be able to do, is just take my time and really perfect every detail.
Well, there's so many ways to connect with people. There's so many ways to say, I love you. There are so many ways to make music. And it's like, I mean, you know, like for me, like TikTok is something that I'm like, TikTok rock, Rick rock. I'm just like, it doesn't make sense to me, but I do enjoy the TikTok videos that I do get to see.
I have people send me TikTok videos all the time. And then I go to TikTok and I'm just like, well, I can't look at any other videos. It's just, it's so much of it's just nonsense, you know?
Yeah, it's a little confusing for me. Everyone's like, you need to get on TikTok, and I get on there and I don't know what I'm doing.
But you know, it's an experiment. It's like, you know, like the reason that you're doing rap music now is because you were fucking around. You were experimenting. You were like going with your instinct.
Yes.
You know?
And so, and you know yeah. Mm-hmm. Even it's like now every time we learn, we learn the social media apps, they create a new one.
Oh, Lord, honey. It's like, someone was like the other day, it was like, are you on Snapchat? I'm like, that's for babies. They got mad at me.
That was a year ago, Snapchat.
And I was like, honey, I'm like, I ain't got no time to Snapchat. I got bills to pay, dishes to wash, dicks to suck, podcasts to make. It's like, I can only entertain you so much, so many hours of the day.
Yes.
And then the other day, I got to recharge. I got to fill my cup.
And that... Sometimes you get so deep in that you're just following the crowd. You don't even realize it, you know?
What's your movie, like, when you are sad and you want to get happy, what's your, like, do you go on YouTube and you're like, I got to play this clip. I got to watch this scene from this movie. Whenever it's playing on TV, you're like, ooh, I got to sit down and watch this just for a minute.
I have two movies that I have been switching between that just make me laugh so hard. One is Smiley Face with Anna Faris.
I haven't watched it.
She's a stoner. And if you're a stoner, it's just a day in the life of this stoner where everything goes wrong.
I used to smoke more, but I just, you know, I'm trying to get my heart health better, so my cardio and whatnot. So I've been doing more. I've been eating things instead, a little more edible. I'm on the edible side these days.
Okay.
You know.
And then what's the other movie?
The Lovebirds. It's on Netflix with Issa Rae. And it's like, I don't know the actor's name, but it's about a couple who basically gets mixed up in the wrong crowd just through an accident. And it's them, the whole movie is them trying to get out of this situation, but everything is going wrong. And it's just so hilarious.
And that also co-stars Kumali Nanjiani. But have you seen him? He's like worked out. He looks good, honey. He's
That's what one
shape.
Of my friends was telling me.
Oh, yeah. Google Kumali Nanjiani.
Yeah, he got real buff.
He got super buff. I was like, damn, honey. He ain't eating curry, I'll tell you that. No butter chicken for him.
No, it's all
I
lean protein.
I loved him in that movie.
Do you like brown rice and vegetables, darling?
I love everything.
That's a movie, Showgirls. Whenever that's playing, I got to watch it. Mm. Just a little bit.
Is there, since you're from Alabama, what kind of unusual foods down there do people in Alabama eat that we might not know about up here in Chicago or through the world? Because people all over the world listen on the internet.
I really like pig ears. My mom would make pig ears a lot.
How do you fix them?
She would put them in like a crock pot with beans and you just boil it.
And so is it is there meat in there, or is it skin, cartilage? What's that like?
It's mostly like skin and cartilage.
You know that like, cartilage is good for this, for good for your skin, good for your bones.
Thanks for telling me that.
Oh yeah.
You know the crazy thing in Puerto Rico, where I'm from, and one of my dad's favorite dishes was pig's feet stew with garbanzo beans. Mm.
My dad.
I like pig feet too.
Yeah. Do you like them pickled? My dad would eat them pickled. Ooh.
I like the pickled ones, and my mom would boil them as well with beans. But I love getting the pickled ones from like the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my friends think it's gross.
I mean, can you even find that in Chicago?
You can buy you can buy pig's feet and pickled feet. Yeah, you got to go to the Latin American markets.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah, it's like my father used to scream, "¿Dónde está mi patita de cerdo?" And I'm like, "Here's your goddamn we would serve him his food and he just would be like kind of shocked by it. Cuz he'd scream about it. He's like and I'm like, "That's not for dinner, Dad. We're serving spaghetti or whatever." And he'd just be only wanting to eat that dish. Mm.
I remember being like, bring my friends over into the house so they could look in the refrigerator and see the pig's feet in a glass, and, you know, because they didn't, you know, they didn't know any better. You know what I mean? Because my dad grew up on, you know, my dad grew up on a farm. So that was the food that they would eat. And I guess I tried it, but and I would like to try it again, maybe as an adult. Maybe I'd have a different opinion of it, you know, because I do like pickles and I do like pickled foods.
I love it.
What else is like you get hungry for that freaks people out?
Okay. I like turkey wings, hog mogs, neck bones.
What's a hog mog?
It's kind of like pork hocks. So I made some. I want to say a week ago.
Googling this and it's making me faint.
Pork mog?
HOGMAW.
Like ham hocks.
Yeah. And it's a popular dish in Pennsylvania, actually, Mark. Dutch hog maw. Ooh, that I don't even want to know what's in it. It's like it's smoked sausage, sweet Italian sausage, stomachs, russet potatoes, all kind of put together. Is that right?
I was thinking more like ham hocks. Maybe that's what I'm talking about. But a lot of times the way my grandma say stuff when I really find out how you really spell it is not how she say it, but it's like you're kind of used to saying it that way. But I make those dishes when I know it's just me.
Well, you know, it's Mardi Gras. Well, Mardi Gras was
last week. 2 weeks ago.
So we're in, you know, the spirit of the season. Have you been able to celebrate anything at home? Because, like, I saw photos in New Orleans and it's like, it's a ghost town. It's kind of scary.
I I don't like going back home.
Yeah.
But usually I will try to go. When I do go, I try to go to a Mardi Gras because a lot of people go home for Mardi Gras. So mm-hmm. you get to see everybody.
Right, right.
But I haven't been in a few years.
Mm. But I mean, like, how do you celebrate at home? Like, did you make anything special?
So Mardi Gras actually started in Mobile. So we had the parades there.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it originated in Mobile, Alabama. So when I was growing up, Mardi Gras was 2 weeks, but I think it's like 3 weeks now. They made it longer.
Mm. They go like pretty much right from Christmas right into Carnival and Mardi Gras.
A lot of times people leave up their tree and make it a Mardi Gras tree.
So you're saying the Mardi Gras, the popular one, was in Mobile first, and then it kind of got to New Orleans.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. I know like in St. Louis, they also have a very popular Mardi Gras too. Anywhere kind of like where the, you know, the French were, right?
And Casey, just so you know, Puerto Ricans also leave their Christmas up tree till April.
Really?
It's not, I don't know what it is. If when you love that Christmas tree, you don't want to let go of it.
Yeah, I know a lot of people would make them like turn it into a Mardi Gras tree.
I love that idea. And that's a good, I feel like it's just such a waste, you know, to set up a Christmas tree and to like when I see people taking it down on January 5th, I'm like, you're a killjoy. Yeah, I love that idea of keeping it up till Mardi Gras.
Yeah, get a few more weeks out of it.
Although I'm sure it's, you know, nice and dry by the time Mardi Gras, all the needles are on the floor.
Yeah, well, we always had a fake one, but...
Oh, my goodness. Do you change the decorations on the Mardi Gras tree? I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, like, you'll put the Mardi Gras colors, the gold, purple, and green.
Right, right.
Because a lot of people decorate for Mardi Gras back home.
And then you make all those delicious treats and the king's cake.
Moon pies. Mm. I miss moon pies.
Have you ever choked on a king's cake, little baby Jesus?
No.
I'm always scared when I'm eating king cake that I'm going to choke.
No, I haven't.
And they're like, you get to be the king of the day. And I'm like, if I survive this thing.
Yeah, I don't want to be that kind of king. I don't want to be a choking one.
I bought a king cake because this year I was like, I want to get like all the Mardi Gras treats. So I got some of the Swedish semla. I, you know, we had the Polish, the punchkis, and I also got a king cake. I ate 3/4 of it, but there was no baby Jesus in it, probably because it was a choking.
You probably swallowed it.
No.
I'm sure you did.
No, you can't swallow
it. You were like a snake with an egg.
A little plastic baby.
You know, unhinged that jaw and went around the circle, and I was like, it saved some for me, baby.
So are you doing some shows on the internet? Do you got what kind of gigs you got coming up?
I don't have any gigs coming up as of now on the internet. Mm-hmm. I just did my friend Black History program for one of my friend's job. So that was pretty sweet.
Oh, cool.
But it's kind of hard doing internet shows.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, it's just so different. It you know, sometimes it can be enjoyable, but that being, as you know, being in front of a live audience, the dynamic is just so different, right?
Yeah, because you're feeding off the energy as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And the audience also is better behaved too. You know, it's like when you're performing, when you're streaming online, it's like the audience is like probably watching television at the same time. You know, yeah. They're not giving you their full attention either.
Or eating you up in the comments. At least the person, you don't have to hear it.
Oh, no. That's terrible. Well, Casey, you know, I'm sorry that we can't do this podcast with you in person, but I really do appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come join us today.
No problem. Thank you for having me. And I'm sure this won't be the last time.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
You live down the street, don't you?
I live like right by a little by Charlie's in the center on Halsted.
Oh, okay. That's,
yeah, it's a hot that's, skipping that's away.
It's a 7-minute drive.
Okay.
depending on what time of day it is and stuff like that.
We'll get some off-season king's cake. I just feel like when this pandemic is over, everybody's going to be like celebrating like Mardi Gras, Christmas, 4th of July, you know, Easter.
Market days
all at once. Because they're going to be making up for lost time, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
I just saw somebody post on Facebook. They're like, how many of you raise your hand if you're going to have an orgy a day every day after this COVID is over? You know, I'm so glad that we have the podcast as an opportunity for great artists like you to be heard and celebrated. You inspire me. And right now we are living in such challenging times, and it's so important to connect and show art that inspires. I'm so glad you could come on the show today. You are awesome, Casey.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course.
Now, we want to leave people with one of your best songs. Is that How She Doing, or should we listen to Bitch Pudding?
Oh, I like How She Doing better.
Well, it was good to hear your voice, Casey. It's so nice to hear you. Please come back on the podcast and let's have some King Cake together.
Okay, it's a date.
All right.
What are you going to bring?
Some shrimp.
Oh, we'll make a spicy jambalaya.
Yes. Oh, southern dish.
Jambalaya. I like saying it and I like eating it.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Because that jambalaya is like a rice and shrimp together with a little bit of tomato sauce and peppers and
some
bacon
sausage
fat.
Maybe. Yeah. Too, right.
Yes. I love jambalaya and gumbo.
We made some gumbo the other day. Seafood gumbo.
Yummy.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Vixen liked it so much, she took two tubs of it home.
I'm jealous. I love me some seafood gumbo.
She was mad because we were using mussels in it. And she's like, this is not my mama's cooking. I was like, well, I don't have your mama's recipe. This is my recipe.
And we also put cod in it. Because, you know, the thing with gumbo is, like, you put anything into it. You know what I mean? Within parameters, you know?
Yeah.
What do you like to put in your gumbo, honey?
My great grandma used to always make it. I know she would put like hot sausage, shrimp, crab, okra. Those are like the main ingredients I remember in her gumbo.
Well, you know, it's made with that brown roux, and that's why RuPaul was called RuPaul.
Yeah.
Because her mother is just like, you're the color of roux. And then she had seen a musician called RuPaul. RuPaul. And so then she changed it to RuPaul. And it's because, I guess, something like that. RuPaul found an album later or a magazine, and it had that musician's name in it, and it was underlined.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I mean? And so he asked his mother, like, where did that name come from? And the mother's that was the magazine. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I never knew that.
Yeah. That's why we made gumbo with Vixen, because she wanted to get on RuPaul's Drag Race. So, like, this is the hook.
The good luck soup.
And RuPaul said, I think we'll give you a wonderful edit. And the rest is herstory.
Yes.
Like my grandma say, we gonna bless that baby.
Many blessings for sure.
Many blessings to you, Casey, and to your family. And have a
hello.
Hello.
Yes, we're here.
Oh.
Click. Click. Many blessings to you and your family. Yes. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast again, dear.
Thank you for having me, and have a good night.
All right.
You have a good night too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Casey Ortiz lives in Chicago, Illinois. You can listen to their music on everywhere you find music. Casey Ortiz. A lot of the music also, you can go directly through the links on our website, feastoffun.com, and through the links in the show notes. Just scroll down, honey. And you can listen to all of Casey Ortiz's music if you're on Spotify, Apple Music, Pandora, wherever you stream your music. Enjoy Casey and put it on repeat.
And I want to remind folks, too, that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen.
So we're playing dollar drinks? Are we playing Sex Me? Are we playing Bitch Pudding?
I think she wanted the something. How she doing?
How she doing? All right, let's listen to it. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Got high libido. Hello Kitty pretty. Get wetter than a Speedo. Fucking with this light skin. Call that nigga Cheeto. Everybody know I go ham. Chorizo. I'm on it. That's why they wanna bone me. Send the motherfucker on a ride like Coney. Island, styling, high profiling. Can't get me out their head like Kylie. Nah, nah, nah. What she doing now? Come take a look on this sweet potato pie.
bitches can't see me. Officer Carruthers, waka waka waka. Casey ain't playing. I'm the shit. Just saying. I run the block. How she doing? My shit is hot. How she doing? I got that game on lock. How she doing? What you got? How she doing? No tea, no shade. I'm fresh as lemonade. I don't care what them bitches say. I be getting paid. Them gals have no cuffs. I'm ripping off the roof. I'm tight cause I'm an asshole. Y'all be looking loose. No lubrication. I cause devastation. They get silent when I come around. Bitch, like meditation. Shh, be quiet. Yo, this ain't the library, but I'm reading out y'all ass. Yes, this is the library. It's my time. Bitch, I am a K-9. I'm unplugging your Xbox. Niggas get no playtime. Don't pinch the fruit faggot. I'm dead, no casket. KC always popping off. It must be elastic. 9-11, you tragic. Shit will get drastic. I got that long reach. Mr. Fantastic. I got them ballin' niggas. Tricking off that car now. You better Google my charges. Marlo. I run the block. How she doing?